Here's Jack Patty.
Yeah, good morning. Welcome into this Forensic Friday, the 28th day of March. Brought to you by Landscapers Corner, 1305 Old Frankfort Pike. Landscapers Corner has Triple Crown Elite Grass Seed, the seed that everybody's talking about, available in 5, 25, and 50-pound bags. Call 225-9433. Cowboy attorney Ray Larson is here, of course, as he is almost every Friday. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Jack.
You do take time off occasionally, but not a whole lot.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. My wife and I are going to go to, you know, we've watched and watched you take time off.
Right.
And she says, well, why can't you do what Jack does?
Yep.
And I said, well, he's got a better voice than I do. Oh, no. She said, I mean by taking time off.
Oh.
And so we're going to go. I went to high school in France. My dad was in the Air Force.
Yeah.
And when we were stationed there, I went to high school over there. And I've always wanted to go back. And so we're going to do that.
Cool.
I don't ever tell anybody when or where. And I typically don't even tell them in the office because they start getting... they start sliding on me.
Yeah,
you know,
I know.
What I mean?
Getting lazy.
Well, that's
goofing off.
I wouldn't have said that.
Right, goofing off.
That, you hit it.
Well, good. I think that's good. I think it's time that you did something nice for that woman you're married to.
That's what she thinks.
Yeah.
Well, we're here today to talk about a homicide that occurred in 2010, and it's kind of a brutal crime.
Mm-hmm.
And with us is the prosecutor of the in the case, Kimberly Baird.
Hey, Kim.
Good morning.
Morning.
She sounds so nice.
Yeah, she's nice lady.
Well, she's a pretty tough prosecutor.
Yep.
And the detective assigned to that case is Franz Wolf. And I noticed this morning when you announced what was coming on that you called him Frank.
I did.
And then you corrected yourself.
I did.
And he said, you set me up, didn't you, Ray? Because I call... Franz, Frank, most of the time.
Yeah.
Or Franck.
Franck.
Because he appears to be something of a wedding planner.
Are you a by any chance, French guy? That's a kind of a French-sounding name.
No, not at all.
Franz?
Born and raised here in Lexington, but come from a very German family.
German. Okay. Now that makes sense.
That wasn't even close, Jack.
Good morning, Franz.
Yeah, yeah.
Good morning, Franz. Trying to tie in the Paris and
this is really a cosmopolitan show.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Okay, so tell us, let's get, Franz, pull that microphone over, and let's figure out how were you made aware of this case?
The police department became aware of this case on the 15th of August, back in 2010, when the police responded to an address in a rural address on Russell Cave Road, just on the other side of I-75. The homeowner at the address where this occurred was walking down his driveway in the early morning hours and discovered a body that had been dumped next to his driveway in a ditch, and the body had been lit on fire. Of course, after discovering that, the homeowner contacted the fire department and the division of police, and when the police department responded, they called the homicide unit out to begin the investigation in the case.
Okay, now the homicide unit, Jack, at the Lexington Division of Police is you've heard me say this before, is a pretty outstanding
mm-hmm.
group of detectives. The normal percentage of murders around the country that are solved by various police agencies is between 50% and 65%. And our group, our homicide unit, last year they solved 100%. And typically they have a clearance rate that's a solving the crimes.
Right.
That's what they call it, is in the mid 90%. So we're particularly proud of this crowd.
Sure.
I hate to even admit that in front of Franz.
Yeah, right.
But what happens is they go about when a homicide occurs. You aren't just the next guy up, and you're the only one that arrives on the scene. How does the homicide unit deal with these kind of calls?
Well, in this situation, of course, there was a lot going on. The victim in the case was severely burned and was not identifiable at the time, at least at the scene. The fire department responded, and we worked together with the arson unit at the Lexington Fire Department to collect the evidence at the scene and to remove the body to Frankfort for so an autopsy could be conducted in an effort to begin to try to identify who the victim in the case was.
I've got my knowledge from watching TV, so you know I'm dangerous, but what kind of control, if any, does the coroner's office have in a situation like this?
Of course, the coroner's office would be the lead investigators at a death scene, and at that point, the homicide unit would be working hand-in-hand with the coroner's office.
I see.
And of course, in this situation, the coroner's office was present the entire time, and they assisted in identifying the body that ended up being a victim by the name of Victor Martin. And it was a joint effort between all these agencies in an effort to get that accomplished.
So you're the lead investigator. You're designated as the case officer. Does everybody at the homicide unit show up?
Most of the time there are a significant portion of the detectives assigned to the homicide unit that will respond to a scene. In this case, there were most all of the homicide unit detectives were available that morning and responded to the scene.
How many?
There's 10 of us that are on an on-call rotation at the police department right now.
And so for example, as the lead investigator, you basically ask the other detectives to do things to deal with the investigation of this thing.
Yes, every case is different and requires a different set of tasks that need to be accomplished. And the homicide, I was the lead detective on this case, and the homicide unit will work together in an effort to get those tasks accomplished. Everything's prioritized, the tasks are tackled by the detectives at the scene and the detectives in the unit that need to be taken care of in an effort to solve the case that's being investigated.
A great example of that was the Martha Post, the Lexington dermatologist that was murdered and her body was there at the scene, and the Bill Brislin was the lead detective, and he asked some of these homicide units to go to various, for example, go to the home of Martha Post's house and talk to the husband and just any number of other kind of tasks. Okay, so tell us how you go about managing the investigation of this case.
Well, again, in this case, the victim was badly burned, and it was very apparent that the victim had been bound by different types of tape and cording and dumped in this remote area in an effort by the unknown suspect in an effort to destroy evidence or conceal the identity of the victim. So the following day, an autopsy, the victim was transported to the medical examiner's office in Frankfort, where an autopsy was performed. And at the medical examiner's office, the victim's body was photographed, and a photograph of the victim was placed, was released to the media in an effort to gain information on the identity of the victim of the homicide.
He didn't have any kind of anything on him, on his person?
He had nothing, no type of identification, yeah, or any type of paperwork that we were able to use to identify who he was.
Well, now, I've seen the photographs of the victim in this case, and they're pretty gruesome from being burned pretty significantly. How careful are you when you release photographs to the media? Because you got to walk kind of a fine line between you know, this thing being sensationalized versus let's help us with the identity? How do you manage to do that?
Well, we do, and we don't want to release more information than we have to when doing something like this. However, in this case, a decision was made to release a photograph of the victim's face because that was a very necessary thing to do to get the victim identified as quickly and as early in the investigation as possible.
Okay, we're going to take a break. 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T. 27 minutes after 9 o'clock. Glad you are here with us this morning. We have, of course, Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson, Assistant Commonwealth Attorney Kim Baird, and Detective Franz Wolf from the Police Department. Body was found, this is back in 2010, that had been shot. Did we establish that, Franz?
We did. At the autopsy, we learned that the victim had been shot one time in the left eye, which was the cause of death.
Hmm. Okay, so you say that you released a photograph of the victim's head, face, right? And was that something, before you released it, did you do any kind of
did you enhance that photograph? Is that what you're asking?
Yes, we did.
I wondered that too.
We did. We had to, due to the extensive burning on the majority of the victim's body, we had to. I guess you would say digitally enhance the victim's face in an effort to make it presentable,
right.
So we could place it on in a media outlet for the public to view.
Did you get hits from it?
We did. Actually, the night that it was placed on the news, it was the day after the victim was located, we got a call. We received several calls, including a call from a lady that was ended up being the victim's mother. That night, after receiving this telephone call, we met with this individual at her residence, and she had numerous other family members at her residence when we arrived. And the video or the image that was released to the media was pulled up on the computer while we were at the house, and all of the family members were saying that they believe that the individual, the victim in this case, was their family member by the name of Victor Martin.
That's got to be hard to that's, you all deal with some really stressful situations as you're dealing with family members, survivors of homicide victims. I know we do with through our victims assistance group as well.
Was there anything like jewelry or anything like that that helped identify the body or not?
There was not. It was really a tough case in an effort to get the victim identified, and it really assisted us after speaking with Victor Martin's family. Of course, in addition to identifying their loved one, we couldn't take that as concrete information. Additional testing had to be done to confirm that. However, the victim's family, Victor Martin's family, was able to provide us with initial facts about Victor Martin, friends, family, places that he frequented, so we could, at that point, begin the investigation into what led to Mr. Martin's death.
And do they do dental records or anything like that for positive ID?
Absolutely. It was actually a couple days after the picture was released back up in Frankfort again. Dental record comparisons were completed, and it confirmed that the victim in our case was actually the body of Victor Martin.
Taking a break, and we'll be right back. 2-5. Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson with us, Assistant Commonwealth's Attorney Kim Baird, Detective Franz Wolf. Ray?
Well, we just got a call from Kimberly's mom wanting to know when she's going to get to say
right,
something.
Right, right.
Yeah, so, Franz, would you please tell us how you went ahead and solved this murder so we can get involved with Kimberly, the prosecutor in the case, so we can get her mother off my back?
Right.
Absolutely. After we made contact with Victor Martin's family and Victor Martin was identified as being the victim in this case through dental records, we began following up on information that was primarily provided by Victor Martin's family in regards to friends and family, or friends and places where their loved one frequented.
And did the family have any idea who might want to do this to him?
They didn't.
No.
They didn't know who did this to him, and really at this early stages of the investigation, no one knew who had done this to him. But we were able to begin initial interviews with individuals that were close to him, including the individual that ended up being the defendant in this case, the individual by the name of Sidney Williams. We received the name Sidney Williams from the victim's mother, who stated that Sidney Williams was a friend of the victim, a co-worker of the victim, and that a person that helped the victim out on numerous occasions. And
she didn't suspect him, obviously.
She did not,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
The day after learning the name Sidney Williams as being a friend and a co-worker of the victim, Detective Brislin and I traveled to Mr. Williams' house and interviewed Mr. Williams about his relationship with the victim in an effort to see if he had any information that might assist us in identifying a suspect. Because at that time, we only knew Mr. Williams as a friendly person to the victim.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Williams provided information, spoke poorly about the victim in a couple different aspects, and ultimately during this interview, we presented Mr. Williams with the image that had been released to the media of the victim. And I found it interesting after this case developed that Mr. Williams, during that interview, looked at that image and said that he was only 75% certain that the image released to the media was his friend, Victor Martin. Several other interviews were completed in this case, and all leads were followed until a period of time went past, and leads began to slow down coming into the police department, and the case honestly went cold for several months.
When you did that initial interview, did you come away suspicious of him?
Not at all.
Okay.
At that point, it was early in the investigation. We believed Mr. Williams to be a friend and a co-worker of the
victim. But you said he badmouthed him a little bit.
Well, right? he spoke a little bit about a criminal history that the victim had, but that was true. He had had his brushes with the law,
okay,
which were confirmed. But in leaving that interview, Detective Brislin and I did not in any way feel that Mr. Williams was involved or a suspect in this case.
So what caused you to suspect him and ultimately charge him with the murder of Victor Martin?
Well, about 7 months passed, and again, this case became cold, and we received a telephone call from an individual who worked with Sidney Williams' longtime live-in girlfriend, Renetta Blevins, and they worked at a hotel here in Lexington together. And this individual that called in said, I think that I have information on a homicide case that you may be working. This individual came to the police department, explained his relationship to Renetta Blevins, work relationship, and told myself and other detectives that over the past 7 months, Renetta Blevins had approached a couple other co-workers at their hotel in which they work and provided information to these co-workers in regards to her live-in boyfriend, Sidney Williams, killing somebody in their kitchen several months prior. Of course, after receiving this information, we immediately made contact with the employees that Renetta Blevins had supposedly had contact with and interviewed these individuals and learned that this information was accurate and learned that actually the day after the Victor Martin's body was located on Russell Cave Road, Renetta Blevins came to work that Monday morning and contacted the front desk clerk at this hotel and laid a lot of the facts of the case out to her, stating that that her live-in boyfriend, Sidney, had believed that the victim in the case had broken into their house on an earlier occasion. She was able to tell us that Renetta told her that Sidney had lured the victim to the house by telling Victor that he had some landscaping work that he was going to let him help him complete. and that once the victim got to the house, that her boyfriend, Sydney, shot and killed the victim in their kitchen, and that the victim was ultimately dumped in the county by Sydney Williams. And at that point, she said, with another unnamed person assisting Mr. Williams. There was a second employee that was interviewed that corroborated the same information sometime past after the crime had been committed. Renetta again confided in a second employee and provided the same types of factual information in this case to that employee.
Is that enough to charge? Is that enough information? Or?
Well, at that point, it was enough to bring Renetta Blevins in and interview Renetta Blevins about her knowledge about the case.
And did she confirm what?
She did, absolutely. She was brought in that very next morning. We made contact with her the case.
And did she confirm what?
She did, absolutely. She was brought in that very next morning. We made contact with her, and she laid down the facts of how Victor Martin was
killed. She was an eyewitness to this.
She was in the house when it occurred. She was actually in the living room in the front of the house when Victor Martin came to the to the residence to meet with Sydney Williams in the kitchen. She said that there was a conversation about Sydney helping or asking Victor to do some landscaping work with him, and once Victor got to the house, Sydney Williams confronted him about possibly breaking into his residence on an earlier occasion. And during this conversation, an argument ensued. Renetta Blevins stated that she heard a gunshot go off. She went into the kitchen, and she observed Victor Martin laying on the kitchen floor in blood.
Okay.
All right, this will be a good time to take a break. When we come back, this is a show that I really particularly like because it's the law and order thing where we get the police investigation and then we go to court. Yeah. Unfortunately, Kim's getting the short end of the stick, as we used to say up at home, because we're about out of time. So, Kim, you got 5 minutes to tell us about the trial.
That's good. I'm here for moral support, so I'm good with that.
Good.
We tried this case, Todd Bradbury and I tried this case the end of January of last year. And the witnesses were pretty much the ones that Detective Wolf talked about. And we had Miss Blevins testify and the witnesses that spoke with her from the hotel, the fire department, police. We had a lot of witnesses that testified at trial. And it was clear that Miss Blevins at that time still cared for Mr. Williams. And so as she testified, she wasn't as forthcoming. So we had to impeach her a lot with the things that she said.
Now, whoa. That's a legal term we use. Tell me what you mean by impeach.
When she would testify, her version at trial was a little bit different than what she told the police and what she told her coworkers.
Soft peddling, maybe.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. Because it was clear she was trying not to hurt Mr. Williams in her testimony.
Yeah.
So as she would say things, we would have to go back and ask her, well, did you tell the police this and did you tell the police that? So we ended up having to play parts of her statement because she said she didn't remember. But we ended up getting out what she said, and it was very damaging, and that's why I said it was clear that she still cared for him, because it was very damaging and she didn't want to bring that out. Mr. Williams himself also testified at trial, which we thought was rather interesting. He had already given a statement to the police a couple of times. He talked about, initially he said to the police that he had asked Mr. Martin to come over because he had a landscaping job and Mr. Martin didn't show up. Then the second time he talked to them, he said that Mr. Martin had come over and they got into a struggle and Mr. Martin brought the gun and they fought over it and then he shot him. At trial, he embellished that even more, and he said he came home and Mr. Martin had been smoking crack in the house, that he heard his girlfriend kind of making a noise in the bedroom, and that he believed that Victor was attacking her, so he pulled her off of her, and they struggled all in the hallway and in the living room and the kitchen, and that Victor then pulls out a gun, and they struggle over that. It falls to the ground. He picks it up, raises it up, and then shoots him in the eye. So he was truly claiming self-defense. But then afterwards, and after Victor was on the ground, he then wraps him up in bags, ties him up, and then kind of puts him off in the laundry room for a while. He doesn't call the police. He doesn't ask for help. And then they drive around trying to find some place to put him. So then they go out to this residence that's out, Russell Cave, and he starts a fire, and he says his intent was not to burn Victor, but they wanted a sort of like a smoke signal. He wanted to set the fire to draw attention to it,
even what? Though
way out in the middle of nowhere, but to draw attention to the body so that it could someone could come and help.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. But then while it was out there, somehow he tripped, and Victor's body rolled into the fire and down into the ravine.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That sounds the most implausible thing I've ever heard.
Very much so, as did the jury. So yeah. The jury convicted him of murder, and he also had prior felony convictions. So the jury gave him a sentence of 35 years for the murder. Tampering with physical evidence, he got 10 years. And then he got 12 months on abuse of a corpse. So the judge got 35 years out of that sentence.
Well, and yeah, I don't know how juries come up with this, but it seems to me that juries have kind of found themselves hung up on a 30 to 35-year sentence for defendants who are convicted of murder. I don't understand how they've kind of settled on that. I know the family of Victor Martin was not very happy with the jury because, you know, they got a life sentence,
right,
of grief over the loss of their child. And so, but at any rate, that was the outcome. It was very well investigated, and the trial was done well by Kimberly and Todd, and I'm proud of the work that they do. So that's
thank you guys very much. Thank you, Franz.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kim. Thank you, Ray. We'll see you in a week.
Okay.